If you've listened to episode 39, which is the Eat Better on a Budget episode, y'all know I was a struggle shopper. I was a grocery store wanderer. I was a no list having son of a gun. And if that's you, I say this with love, you have to break that habit. Go into the store with a plan. And then these days have a secondary plan in case things on your primary plan are out of stock.
Yeah. It's
typically grocery stores run with about 7 to 10% of items out of stock. But with all of the supply chain issues, that's causing that number to be much higher. So don't leave it up to chance. If they don't have the spaghetti noodle that you need, go ahead before you get there and decide what the alternative is going to be instead of leaving it up to the store's marketing teams, because that's how you get sucked down the rabbit hole of a bunch of things that you don't need.
Welcome to the Rich and Regular podcast presented by Success, where we explore life at the intersection of money. I'm Julian.
And I'm Kirsten. And today we're talking about the fact that you got food at the house. Actually, we're talking about how to adjust your grocery habits for inflation.
Yeah, man.
And it's been a while since we talked about food. Like, I feel like this is your doing that, you know, it's been almost 5 months. I think our last episode was back in January. We talked about food?
Yeah. We talked about food and kind of ways for people to eat better while still managing their budget at home. Obviously, we've written an ebook or e-guide, which is available for you guys to purchase. It's called Eat Better on a Budget. And so we recorded an episode that was kind of dedicated to that subject. But I don't think this is all my doing. I think a lot of it is also because, like, food and groceries are really expensive right now. Just the other day, I was thinking about it. And I just remember standing at the checkout and I was like, man, it was like $200.
Oh, I know.
And I was like, I cannot think of the last time I spent $200. And I still, like, I only knew that was going to last us. Granted, it was a couple of things. Bought some things in bulk, had enough for, like, you know, all three meals, and obviously thinking about our son. But, like, the cost of food is, like, really, really expensive right now. So I think that's a part of why we wanted to make sure that we talked about it a little bit on the podcast.
Yeah, they've reached, like, food prices have actually reached a record high recently.
Yeah.
And so now you have a whole group of people suggesting that it may actually be cheaper to eat out versus buying groceries.
In some cases, it is.
And yeah, depending on what you cook, that may be true. We'll talk a little bit about what types of food are seeing the highest increases in rates. But I do want to make sure that we communicate that the downsides of eating out all of the time are greater than just cost.
Yeah.
There's also nutritional factors. There's the ability, you lose the ability to cross-utilize ingredients.
Yeah.
You may or may not have leftovers depending on what you eat. So, like, there's still an argument, although it may not be cost-based alone, around why you should still continue to have food at the house.
Well, I think another big part of it is that, you know, I sound like a guy with an aluminum hat on, like a bit of a conspiracy theorist, but I don't think people realize the notion or the tactic of, like, what a loss leader means. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we tend to think of our grocery stores as, like, our friendly place. Like, these aren't people that are, like, trying to take advantage of us. But, like, the one thing that people always recommend is, like, well, why would I buy a raw chicken? A raw chicken's $15 for that whole thing when I can buy fried chicken or a roasted chicken for, like, $5 or $6. And it's like, yeah, they did that on purpose.
Right.
They did that to draw you into the store, because once they get you with the $5 chicken, then they're going to throw on the other things. Well, you might as well go ahead and add three more sides to it.
Right.
Now you're leaving with baked beans, macaroni and cheese. You got a salad, and then you can't help but to think, well, what about dessert? This might not be enough. And before you know it, you're there and you've thrown in a couple of things that you don't even have. So I think that's probably why a lot of people really jump out and say, well, it's cheaper to just buy it if it's already prepared. And I was like, yeah, but that's, like, an artificially, you know, discounted product. I don't know that that's fair to say across the board.
Yeah. So before we jump in, y'all know I always find random stuff.
You sure do.
On the internet. And I recently came across an article by the Wall Street Journal that actually explains how inflation is measured. Now, if you're like me, you probably thought inflation was measured and tracked through, like, droves of data. Mm-hmm. I always imagine people sitting in front of multiple screens like you see on television, and, like, there's all these charts bouncing around, mm-hmm. like the Wall Street movies. But realistically, it's actually 477 government workers whose job is to literally go to stores and check prices.
Yeah.
And then the culmination of their work is the Consumer Price Index. Did you know this?
I did not know this, but I'm not surprised by it because, I'm going back to feeling like a bit of a conspiracy theorist. I feel like that's probably the best way to do it.
Right.
It's the fastest way to do it, and it's the best way to maintain the integrity of that particular index. Like, given how important it is, given how it shapes people's lives, and in some cases can impact the market. Like, I remember when we were recording the podcast about the Vanguard Total Stock Market Index, mm-hmm. and they made a point to talk about CPI because it has a real effect mm-hmm. on how people spend their money and even how people evaluate investments. So I can see a world where, there's like I'm sure there's an agency. I didn't do all the research, but like, it does not surprise me that
Bureau of Labor Statistics.
Well, there it is. Yeah, it doesn't surprise me that it's actual people that are out there going to stores, entering in data and saying this has moved, this hasn't. There are obviously still flaws associated with that, but I think that I would imagine there's a way for people to suffer that as well. But like, I got some appreciation for the old-fashioned approach. It feels very insurance inspection or like quality control to me.
Yeah. So in the article, one of the women describes a typical day on the job, which may take her to the beauty salon to check the price of a blowout. Then she goes to a jeweler to see how much a strand of pearls costs. And then she heads to a funeral parlor to like learn how much it costs to cremate a body. So
I think I did know this, actually.
Like, she's just going to random places figuring out the price. But in order to price an item, they have to go through an 11-page list mm-hmm. of data points to your point, to make sure that they're pricing that item the same way as they did last month.
Yeah.
So for a can of soup, there's 12 different specifications, flavor size, brand, organic, labeling, yep. et cetera. And if anything is off, if they miss one step, it can skew the accuracy of the entire index. I was just blown away because the rules are very strict, but they make anywhere from like $19 an hour up to $30 an hour. A lot of them are part-time. They've been doing this for decades. And so they know what's up. Like, they're the ones who discover sneaky little trends like shrinkflation, which is where brands will change the size of something but keep price the same. So same bag of chips used to be 12 ounces, now it's 11 ounces, but it's still $2. Like,
yeah.
It's this crew of like 477 people working part time that are like spilling the tea.
I think I'm just getting old because as you're saying this, I'm feeling like I've actually heard like an old NPR Planet Money podcast episode about this. So I think I did actually know this because I think I remember hearing people, as you said, it was like I heard the ding, you know, the little ding, the doors opening as somebody's going into a beauty salon. But anyway, this is really, really interesting stuff, but we want to talk a little bit more about how this actually impacts you guys. And so to your point, all of this activity, all of this data is sort of crunched and organized by the Bureau of Labor Statistics. And then it gets doled out there and picked up by journalists, economic journalists. And so the one particular article that we saw was one from Forbes.com. And it was based on April 2022 data. And here's what they showed in terms of the impact of inflation over the last 12 months. And so the leading categories of the top categories where we've seen the biggest impact of inflation would be meats, poultry, fish, and eggs. So collectively, those are up 14.3% over the last 12 months, which is just crazy. Wow. Fruits and vegetables, a 7.8% increase, which, you know, I used to think that those are the things that sort of kept constant a little mm-hmm. bit, but even those are, I think, really expensive. And then they go down to things like electricity and other utilities, which are up 11%, and I mean, piped gas as a utility is up almost 23% year over year. Mm-hmm. Everything from bedding to household cleaning supplies, rent, of course, is up. So everything is just so much more expensive than it was this time of year. But we're spending the bulk of our time actually talking about habits, and we're going to focus a little bit more around those first two categories. So meats, poultry, fish, eggs, fruits, vegetables, food, because that's that big one. That's that third in the big three that we always talk about where people really tend to struggle in terms of stretching their budget. So we want to tackle that to see if we can help spark some new ideas, break some habits, introduce some new ideas to hopefully get you guys to save a little bit more money.
Yeah. So the first habit that you can adjust is consuming less meat.
Yeah.
And it's funny because the dramatic surge in meat prices has been dubbed meatflation. Like all of these original made up words. So meatflation is a real problem. You can actually Google that term and see tons of articles. And going back to the point about eating out, like this is not just affecting consumers. This is affecting restaurants. This is affecting farmers. It's a pretty big deal. The cost of bacon alone is up 18%. And so, again, we have to adjust our habits if we want to keep our grocery bill in check.
Yeah.
And the idea of eating less meat can be a really tough pill to swallow for some people, namely Texans like myself. But we're not saying that you need to go full vegetarian. We're simply suggesting that you can use meat sparingly and use it as a flavor instead of the entire entree a couple of times a week.
Yeah.
So you might add a little bit of bacon to like a risotto or a soup instead of using like sheets of bacon on your burgers or your breakfast sandwiches, just to try to make that bacon stretch a little more and still not completely deprive yourself of the goodness that is bacon, but only using it, you know, sparingly across the board.
Yeah. And listen, for those who are new, I used to be a professional chef. This is something that is just comes naturally to me. And it's one of the reasons why we decided to record that podcast and write that e-guide a few years ago. But this is totally normal. This is what restaurants do because the margins in a restaurant are so razor thin. And so it's really important to cross-utilize as many ingredients as possible without making people feel like they didn't get a good value or bang for their buck. And so in terms of what you guys can do and kind of in line with what Kirsten was suggesting, a couple of things that I would specifically recommend is... I just think about what we just ate for dinner last night and had it again for lunch today. And so I made some mojo chicken. I've been craving some Cuban food. So we made some mojo chicken with rice and beans, right? Like classic, you know, Dave Ramsey, you know, trying to get out of dead food. Beans and rice. Just literally had that. And it was good. And it was particularly good. And I think I told you, like, oh, I think I nailed the mojo recipe. But that aside, I put a lot of bacon fat in the beans, right? Like we made some bacon a few weeks ago, I think. Mm-hmm. And the way that we cook bacon is actually on a cookie sheet or a sheet tray. You bake it in the oven on a little bit of parchment paper. I think it helps to cook it consistently. So one piece of bacon isn't like super crispy and the other one is still kind of fatty. But even if it is, like it's just a lot easier for me. And that's the way that I was taught how to cook it. But the real benefit is like all this liquid gold and delicious fat that you can use to cook virtually anything, right? So if I wanted to make a veggie plate, even though it may not be like a vegetarian plate, but if I wanted to just make a veggie plate cooking things that were pretty affordable, like baked beans or roasted corn, and maybe I wanted to roast some more vegetables, I could actually use that bacon fat that still kind of gives me like a really nice meaty flavor. And I think it helps psychologically, right? Mm-hmm. Like it was like, all right, I'm eating one healthier, but I'm also kind of adding in that layer of bacon and bacon flavor that helps to make the food not taste like so kind of dull and boring. Like bacon fat is just a fantastic mystery ingredient. So I think that's something that a lot of people can really use and to incorporate into their cooking. By the way, this idea is not unusual to a lot of people who are from Asian cultures, right? Like they do this. This is how they naturally cook and prepare a lot of their foods. Like the percentage of meat and meat products that take up a lot of what they cook is just inherently a little, a lot lower than what we consume here in the United States. So it's certainly something to think about as you're exploring new cuisines. It's like sort of veer in the direction of India and Chinese and Korea.
Go east.
Go over there and see how they're cooking and some of those things, and you'll be able to figure out like how they're able to save so much money without sacrificing flavor. But along those lines, I think one of the things that are really helpful, and we do this on a regular basis, is shopping at what is considered Asian food market. So a lot of us are all about these big brands, right? And I'm just going to go ahead and call them out, you know, Kroger and Publix. And, you know, I'm sure there are a couple up there in the Northeast and a few other parts of the country. But these Asian food markets or like these bigger like farmer markets are really, really good. And you can get the same exact brands that you can get, but you don't have all the other fluff and fancy stuff that kind of make those big name brand stores so much more expensive. And so we shop there on a pretty regular basis. We go and we get tons of frozen food items. I get giant bags of rice and beans and other lentils and all of those types of legumes that are easy for making big bulk dishes, but also keeping the cost of our food budgets down. The last thing that I get there that I think is really, really helpful that a lot of people should be buying as well is frozen seafood or like frozen mixed bags of seafood, which I think is like such an easy, easy thing that most people can buy. And so you can buy like a big, almost like 2-pound or 3-pound bag, and it'll have calamari, shrimp, mussels, scallops. And there's just a bunch of things that are sort of mixed up in there all together. And you can use that in a pasta dish if you want a seafood pasta, or if you want to make like a little curry dish, you think in Thai. Like these things are actually really simple to make. Like you can find any number of recipes online, but at their base is really affordable and cheap, but still good for you frozen mixed seafood. So those are some of the things that you tend to find, I believe, at Asian food markets or farmers markets. I don't really like the term Asian food markets.
Yeah.
You know, I don't like that term. But that's how people sort of refer to them as. The one that we go to is called Nam Day Moon. There are several of them here in Atlanta and I believe spread out over the Northeast.
Yeah, you've probably heard it.
Over the Southeast. H-Mart is one. But yeah, you've got those. I would just say the habit here that you probably want to break is just being a little less loyal to some of the big brands that have big fancy commercials, because you can get a lot of the same stuff and in some cases even better stuff at better prices at farmers markets.
The same is true for Dollar Tree. If you have a Dollar Tree in your neighborhood, the grocery section has expanded tremendously over the last few years, and they even have a refrigerator section in a lot of them. So things like trail mix, where you don't realize you're paying $3-4 Kroger, but it's the same exact brand, maybe in a slightly smaller package for a dollar at the Dollar Tree. So definitely recommend kind of expanding your grocery store footprint. Okay, moving on beyond meat, because you also mentioned that fruits and vegetables are up another 8% or so. And this is not an immediate option, but it is an effective one. And the option is to channel your green thumb and try to grow it yourself. Now, I have never been someone who thought I'd have a garden of my own. I didn't grow up where my parents grew herbs and vegetables. I've never seen it. But the advances in gardening tools for small spaces have been great. We've never had like some tremendous backyard where we can have like flower beds.
And don't want one.
And don't want one. But we have a lot of great tools that allow us to grow a number of herbs and vegetables on our patio, just the small space that we have. And if you're really into gadgets and maybe don't have an outdoor space at all, maybe not even a small patio, you can look into hydroponic or indoor gardens. So these do require a bit of initial investment, but if you've ever spent money on like a little sad bundle of greens that wilt in a couple of days from the grocery store, or maybe you live in an area that doesn't get full sun during the day, so like an outdoor garden isn't even a viable option for you, this may be it. So there are a lot of benefits to indoor gardens, but my favorite one is that it's just fun. If you have kids and you want to wean them off of the meat to help support your budget, getting them involved in growing food can make them really enthusiastic about the process. It also helps you increase the variety of what you eat, because you can basically simulate any season through light and temperature control, right? So there's a range of indoor garden kits. As you know, they go from, you know, low price to all the way up to the couple hundreds of dollars. One of the low entry ones is around $80. It's called the Aero Garden. It's one of the more popular ones, and it allows you to grow, again, herbs. You can get bigger sizes if you want to expand into like actual vegetables. But don't underestimate the power of herbs to make basic foods taste good.
Oh, yeah.
We talk a lot about spices and seasoning, but that ain't nothing but a dried herb. So like you can use fresh herbs to create herb butters, to create infused oils, to just add a little oomph to what may feel like a basic dish. It's a really easy and affordable way to do that.
Okay, culinarian.
Look, I know, right? Look at me.
I like that. I've been a big fan of some of those things, primarily because I just think that they are introducing more people to gardening that otherwise wouldn't have, right? Yeah. Like, you don't have the space. Let's say you're in New York, or, you know, you're in an urban environment, or you just live in an apartment and you don't really have the space. Like, those things are real. So if you've seen it online, they're legit. I have a friend of mine who swears by it, but she's growing all kinds of herbs. And I think, to your point, I think the herbs is really the key. Because, look, it'll be really hard for you to, like, keep a constant supply of, like, a vegetable that you eat, right? Like, you're not going to, like, eat a Caesar salad, chop off a head of romaine, and then the next thing you know, next week, it's just magically replaced itself. It's going to take some time for that thing to grow back. But when it comes to things like herbs, basil, chive, parsley, like, those things can grow relatively quickly, and I think even quicker if they're in a controlled environment, and I find it to actually be really helpful for those things. But going back to the earlier point about just being a little less loyal, I know we gave a huge shout out to our local farmers market, Namdi Moon, but there are other options. One of the best options, or I would say the best options in terms of affordability, would be some of those lower cost grocery stores that ship away parts of those experiences. And so if you're Frugal Fran, or whatever Kirsten calls it, I don't know what the male version of that is.
Frank.
Frugal Freddy, who is a legit person that we know, by the way. You know, stores like Aldi and Lidl are, like, really, really helpful. Like,
isn't it Lidl?
Lidl, I think it might be Lidl, Lidl, I don't know. I've never been to one. I think it's Lidl.
I think it's Lidl.
Lidl, Lidl, that sounds weird. Maybe you guys can correct us.
It's German. Do they have a long I in German?
I don't know.
Oh. Okay.
If we have any German listeners out there, you can let us
probably
know.
Probably like how Lidl.
Lidl.
Lidlheisen.
Lidl, okay. That's offensive. But those stores are actually really, really cool. We don't go to them often, but when we do go, it's like, wow, it's actually really cool. It's a completely different shopping experience if you're unfamiliar with that. I think you've got to bring your own bags. You got to bag up your own stuff. Like, it's minimalist, but that's because they want to help keep the costs low and pass that on to you. And so the people who we know that shop there, they're able to get same high-quality products, same organic products in some cases, or specialty products. I will say the variety is a bit limited, but for most people that aren't cooking a bunch of really complicated things, you can find what you need at a store like Aldi or Lidl or Lidl. So don't be so loyal. Like, I get it. You got your Kroger Plus card, and you know what I mean? You like the Publix commercials. Those are great, too. They make you feel good. But you owe it to yourself, especially in a world where prices are up 15% and in some cases 20%, to explore opportunities where you can save some money. So don't be afraid to just find a different store and bring your bags in advance and prepare yourself.
They don't. Sometimes they don't give you a cart, or you got to pay for it.
I think you got to pay like a quarter for a cart.
Yeah, you get it back if you put it back.
Yeah.
That's my understanding.
Yeah, it's a unique, I'm not going to say weird, unique experience. But the cost savings for sure is undeniable. So certainly something to check out.
We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with some other grocery habits you can tweak to save some money. Okay, so this next habit is one that we've talked about many times before in a number of different ways, and that is basically sharing. So what does that look like with groceries? It looks like buying your staples in bulk and then splitting it with a neighbor or a family member.
Yep.
The idea here is basic, and it's that if your kitchen and pantry are stocked up on the basics, meaning pasta, rice, bread, frozen vegetables, fruit, things like that, then you'll need to buy fewer items every week.
Yep.
Right? So when you buy those items, those basic items, those basic products in large quantities, you can cut costs. So we're all familiar with the membership clubs, and a few of them actually have membership fees, annual fees that can cut into your savings and actually make it less valuable of a proposition. So a couple of tips to avoid paying for those that I've learned through the grapevine and through the number of forums that I participate on online. The first one is to try a trial membership. So Sam's offers a 90-day trial, and BJ's offers a one-day shopping pass, so you can try it out before committing to whatever the annual membership cost is. Another option is to get a gift card. So some stores will allow you to shop if you have a gift card for their business. Check with the store first, but again, it's another way that you can possibly maneuver your way in without having the actual card. And then another way to get around the membership is actually to use a service called Instacart. Now, Instacart does have a fee, I believe, But if you have Instacart, you can order items through Costco and then have it delivered through Instacart.
So if I'm not mistaken, Instacart Plus or whatever their premier service has a fee, but their regular service is actually free. And in addition to that, if you want like their add-on service, which means that like, you would get like priority service or the ability to schedule when you want, you know, something like that. If you want it,
there's probably like a delivery
2 hours
fee,
but you don't need or something to pay like a membership. That. Exactly. Yeah. They've got levels like most of those other services. But
yeah. So if you do order Costco through Instacart and you are not a member, you may have to pay a higher price for goods than members do, but it depends on local policies. So again, check your app to see if that's something available to you.
Yeah, I think one of the things that probably turn people off, and if they're anything like me, is that, well, I don't have the space. And what am I going to do with a 10-pound thing of mustard? Or I totally get it. You know, like you look at that and it's like, that's like a church outing amount of ketchup and mustard. And like, I'm not going to go through that much stuff. I totally understand that. But don't just obsess about things like that. Like, there are other things, to Kirsten's point, that are shelf stable that you can do. Just really just require you to redesign what your own storage solution looks like. And so even if you don't have the garage with literal aisles, which some people have, where it's like, wow, like you've got a warehouse back there where you can got dry goods and cleaning products, et cetera. You don't need that, right? Like even if somebody else went and got that, you can bring over a spray bottle and then get your cleaning supplies and add a label. Or you can do like we do and get clear plastic containers at the container store or just cheaper versions anywhere, really. It's just a plastic container that you can use to store some of your staples instead of buying smaller amounts at a grocery store at a markup, right? You can get all of those basics. And it doesn't have to be something that you do several times a month, right? Mm-hmm. It's just like, I'm just going to do this 3-4 times a year. I'm going to go over to, I'm just making up a name here, Susan. Sue, going to go to Susan's house.
We do have a neighbor named Susan.
I think we do. I'm go to Susan's house, and I'm going to get my allotment of rice, lentils, beans, you know, pasta, and like, you're done. It's not like that stuff is going to go bad anytime soon. So you can buy a lot of things in bulk, and it cuts down on the number of trips that you would have to make to a grocery store, and you can save a lot of money over the cost of food over a period of time.
Yeah. So along those lines, another tip that I found this time in a New York Times article about people whose grocery habits are changing is this concept called store hopping. And it's exactly what it sounds like. It's basically going to a bunch of different stores to ensure that you get the best prices.
That's so you might shopping.
It's called store hopping.
Or running errands. But
no, but
go off New York Times.
Specifically related to
ridiculous.
Specifically related to groceries, you may go to like a H Mart for fresh vegetables, then go to Trader Joe's for meat, and then maybe also go to Costco for non-perishable goods, which is not typically how people grocery shop. They tend to buy everything in one location. So as I was reading this, I'm sure y'all are very similar to me, where I was just kind of squinting like, well, with these gas prices, like, wouldn't this just be a break even? Because gas is up somewhere around 40% on top of the inflation with groceries. And I think the answer is maybe. It truly depends on where you live. Like, do you even have all of these stores nearby? And then it also depends on how well you plan. If you, you know, are kind of spreading these across the week or across the month, if it's only a one-time trip and you're able to buy a large amount of meat or shelf-stable goods, then it may be worth it to you. I think some people would call this approach a hassle and others would call it strategic. But I know you do something similar.
I do.
Right.
And I would call it a hassle. I think for most people, it's not as much of a hassle for us because we have the privilege of being able to go grocery shopping during the day and like throughout the week where it's less crowded and you can kind of get in and get out. But if you're like a regular working person and you've got to go on the weekends when everyone else in the world is trying to go shopping, like it can actually be really time consuming. And then to think that you've got to come back and then be willing to actually cook or prepare that food. So I can see why it could be considered a bit of a challenge for most people. But again, I think a lot of it is really just a matter of not being so loyal and just picking that weekend where you say, you know what, I'm going to go in a different direction this time. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go try this different store and just try it out. But what we do is we go to the Nam De Moon, and I primarily go, I'm just trying to think of I was just there, I think yesterday or just the other day. And I pretty much get like meats in bulk, right? Like mm-hmm. I do a combination of going to get meats in bulk there. So I'll go there and get like a side of salmon, right? Instead of just buying an individual pack or even going and buying a frozen pack, I can buy it fresh. And really, if you ever buy salmon individual and it has the skin on it, like all you got to do is cut it. Like, that's it. And there it is. There's your individual portion. But they'll charge you 30 or 40% more mm-hmm. just to have it cut and wrapped in a piece of, like, cellophane, right? So what I do is I just go to the store. I buy the entire side. I cut it myself. And then we use a vacuum sealer to preserve the rest of it. And it can stay in your refrigerator for weeks if it's vacuum sealed. And you can stay in your freezer even longer, right? And so that, to me, is one of the best ways to save money. But it would require you to have a food saver, the ability to preserve that food and protect it from oxygen, which is really going to be the thing that helps to break it down. But even if that sounds like a little too difficult for you, like something like a pork loin, which can be like super long, it can look like my thigh. Like it's like a pretty large cut, but you can do the exact same thing with the pork loin. If you go to certain stores that sell the whole loin, just go ahead and cut off, let's say, the 4 or 5 inch part of that loin that you're going to need for, let's say, dinner for two. And you can get maybe 4 or 5 of those out of an entire loin, vacuum seal the rest of them, throw it in the freezer, throw it in the refrigerator. And now you really don't have to worry about pork loin for probably the next 4 or 5 months. I mean, depending on how much you eat pork loin. But we do, again, last one, I do that with beef tenderloin. Whenever I'm feeling a little frisky, I just buy the whole pork tenderloin. Now, this one does require a little bit of butchery and butchering skills. We do have a video on our YouTube page. If you want to go check that out, I'll walk you through exactly how to do it. But again, if you're okay with feeling a little squeamish, because, you know, there's some cutting and, you know, dealing with like pulling off like membranes and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, like you can buy a whole pork tenderloin, I'm sorry, a whole beef tenderloin for like maybe $60, $50. And I'll get maybe 10 filet mignons and a couple of other smaller cuts that I can use for any number of things, like a beef lo mein or a stir fry or fajita night or something like that. And you get all of that for like $60, and you'll have like steak nights for like five different times. So all of that to say, this is one of the benefits to going to stores that allow you to buy meat in bulk. Because I think when most people think about bulk, they're thinking like dry goods or things like that. But you can also get larger cuts. You just need to know how to preserve it so that you don't lose that money to spoilage.
Yes. Love all of those tips. All right. I think the last habit to curb while you're grocery shopping is about the siren song of impulse purchases. Mm-hmm. So again, if you've listened to episode 39, which is the Eat Better on a Budget episode, y'all know I was a struggle shopper. I was a grocery store wanderer. I was a no list having son of a gun. And if that's you, I say this with love, you have to break that habit. Go into the store with a plan. And then these days have a secondary plan in case things on your primary plan are out of stock.
Yeah.
So typically grocery stores run with about 7 to 10% of items out of stock. But with all of the supply chain issues, that's causing that number to be much higher. So don't leave it up to chance. If they don't have the spaghetti noodle that you need, go ahead before you get there and decide what the alternative is going to be instead of leaving it up to the store's marketing teams, because that's how you get sucked down the rabbit hole of a bunch of things that you don't need.
Yeah.
I think this also goes for treats as well. So we have a habit of buying, you know, little snacks, little gourmet ice cream here and chocolate bars, little luxury chocolate bars that have like chili flakes and sea salt and almonds and all kinds of fun stuff in there. And now we're having to figure out what life looks like with fewer of those indulgences, going back to the basics of vanilla wafers, or maybe just a smaller chocolate bar, or even exploring making ice cream ourselves. It's been a fun process, but it's just something that we have had to adjust to make sure that we're not completely overspending every time we go to the grocery store.
Yeah, I started doing that last year. I think it was your mom that got us an ice cream maker. And I've always wanted to make ice cream because I never did like pastries and desserts and stuff like that when I was cooking professionally. But I've actually enjoyed the process. And just like everything else, like no surprise there, you start out, it's kind of terrible. It sucks. You know what I mean? But now I can get it. I don't even need to like look at a recipe. You can just make big batches of ice cream. Our son loves it, and it's like better for you. It doesn't have any of the, you know, preservatives and stuff, but it does require you to have the freezer space to be able to store not just the machine itself, but also the ice cream when you're done making it. But yeah, listen, these are a lot of things that I think a lot of people can do. It just requires you to think differently, to learn different skills. The one thing I will say about grocery stores that I think gets in the way around why people aren't willing to try a new store is that, like, it just takes so much longer. Like, when you go to a store that you know, you know exactly where things are for the most part. You can get in and out. Every time I go to like a store that I don't know, it's like I have to add in. You think it'd be like twice as long? It's like three times as long.
Oh, yeah.
Like when we were in Galveston for a family vacation a few weeks ago, and I was just going to get breakfast so that we could just have something in the house that we were renting. And it took me like 20 minutes just to find syrup.
Yeah.
Like I couldn't find the syrup. And I was just, equal parts like frustrated, but also just really intrigued. Like, where could the syrup be? Like, if all right, if you were, I was like, well, what? I couldn't. It turned out it was like in the paper goods aisle for whatever. Like, I don't, and I'm sure there's a rationale, or maybe not. But like, it wasn't in any of the typical places you would expect syrup to be. Like, it was just so odd. But I think that's part of the reason why people get, you know, it was like, I'm not trying to go. No, I ain't got time for all that.
Yeah.
But I do think that you just gotta. Sometimes it's worth it, right? Mm-hmm. And so you just kind of figure out to go there, get all the meats or get all the bulk things that you want. And yeah, it may not be the best experience or an experience that you're familiar with, but when you're done, when you back out all of the other little trips that you would typically have to take to go to a grocery store, and certainly when you add in or subtract all of the savings that you're going to make just from being able to buy in bulk and preserve foods, I think it helps to make a big, big difference. So break the habit, y'all. Try something new. Go somewhere else and see how much you can save.
Yes.
All right. Final thoughts.
What you got? So my final thought, I'm going to channel my grandma and say, keep an open mind so you don't end up with an empty pocketbook.
Your grandma didn't say that.
She never said that. But it sounds like something she would say.
I was like thinking about her. I was like, no, that don't sound. Miss Mary would never say that. But okay, I'm going to let you have it.
The point is, the reason that we focused on rebuilding habits in this episode is because nobody really knows when inflation is going to actually end.
Sure don't.
Some reports expect it to level out by the end of the year, and others are a lot more grim about the whole thing. But at this point, we've gotten several months of evidence that prices are rising rapidly. And so instead of hoping for a change or just kind of continuing to erode our other financial goals, it may be time for you to commit to doing something different. And food is one of those areas that is really simple and almost immediate in terms of impact. So the good news is that while the short-term side effects of implementing these may be inconvenience or annoyance, the long-term benefits of growing your own food, being intentional where you shop, and even reducing your meat intake are also really long and well-documented and beneficial. So like my grandmother never said, keep an open mind so you don't end up with an empty pocketbook.
Yeah, she didn't say
that. She would have said that, though, had I, like, prompted her.
I'm going to tell her you said that. You're lying on her name. I do not have a closing thought, but I will say, maybe I do. I'll make up one real quick. I think the big thing, we talk about it in our book, we spoke about it on this episode of the podcast, is to really take inventory of American culture at this point and really think about just how deeply individualistic we are today and how that's changed over time. And I'm not saying like just our parents' generation. I think long before that, there was much greater tendency or likelihood for us to share resources. And right now, the idea of sharing just seems crazy. And so everything from services, in some cases, utilities or family plans. Like, guess what, guys? You actually don't have to be a family member with someone to be a part of a family plan, right? It's just a formal way of sharing. And it's not even a hustle. Like Apple is not saying, please submit a family tree and a DNA sample to ensure that the person you're saying is a part of your family is a part of your family. And so I think the big takeaway, my closing thought here, is to really reevaluate the role that sharing plays in your life. Where do you share? What do you share? And I can assure you there's someone else out there who's feeling the pinch just like you. They're feeling the impact of inflation just like you. And maybe we should just introduce the conversation that way and say, you know what, man, this is getting a little ridiculous. What can we do to team up on this so that we can all benefit? So think about it. Think about who's in your family. Think about which one of your friends can be a part of your family for the purposes of getting a family plan. And you might be really surprised by just how much you can save by just being willing to share. So that's my final thought.
Love it. Well, thank you for listening to another episode of the Rich and Regular podcast presented by Success. If you like what you heard, please continue to share the message on the ratings and review page by leaving us a 5-star rating and review. We will see you next week.